Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and U.S.-based Frontline Leadership Systems USA. And our goal in the podcast is through our interviews with guests who come from a wide variety of manufacturing, supply chain, and operational environments, is to really deliver three things to you on a consistent basis. Number one is we want to deliver insights that you can gain and take away to make some of the improvements you're working on in your business go a little faster and a little smoother, a little better. Second thing is we want you to get some insights into how employee engagement, true engagement, can come from helping align people to deliver results as a team. And third, of course, is we want to benefit you personally in your leadership growth journey, as you might look for higher levels of promotion in the future, but also just to realize how you can get more done, be more effective in your role, and do so with less stress. Now, today's guest is someone who I've known for quite some time, John Burke-Martel. And John Burke-Martel is an engineering professional. He's 36 years of experience in operations and management, manufacturing. He's had lots of different stints in different roles, including manufacturing operations, maintenance, automation, 25 years or so in the automotive business or adjacent to the automotive business, 11 years in custom machining, as well for different industries. He's taken so many different certifications in quality engineering and lean. He's very much got a very strong, deep knowledge of that. And today he works at Attica Manufacturing as the engineering manager. I am going to read this, John. As Attica provides custom machining, fabrication, and engineering services of complex parts to various industries, including aerospace, military, water treatment, automotive, and food processing. So welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast, John.
Yep, thanks very much for having me. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. So one of the things that I've known, because John and I have probably had our careers intertwine, I'm going to say at least four or five times. I mean, John's been so gracious that as he moves to a different company in a different role, a different assignment, he usually looks us up at some point or recommends us. So, John, maybe that's the first question I'll start with is, because you've had such a great career yourself and lots of good variety between organizations, is when you think back to something that helped you figure out that maybe I've got something here. So I'm talking now about a success or a win or a key accomplishment you've felt. I'm wondering what might come to mind.
Well, I would say I was thinking about that. And one of the things when my earlier days at Meridian, probably 10 years into my career, we did a major launch for a program for Ford, and it was done in Michigan. So I volunteered to go to Michigan for 5 years. And what was great about that project, we successfully launched the new magnesium rad support for the F-150 pickup truck at that time. And what was fantastic about it, and it'll go down probably as the highlight of my career, technically and otherwise, was that we had such a good team. So we had a very complex task, but we, and in fact, you know, we had a stacked team, meaning we had every discipline and we got along. Now, we weren't necessarily best buddies every day, but we got along. We stuck together for those 3 years, and almost every single member that started that project finished it. And in a lot of those high tension projects, not everyone makes it to the end, right, for different personal reasons, but that was a great thing. And what was even nice is, yeah, really that was a team success. But personally for me, at the end, I got a written letter of recommendation from Ford, which I've laminated and I keep to this day. And, awesome. You know, it's intangible, but it's probably one of the things that I think of most fondly.
You know what my wife often says, because not that I get a lot of fan mail, but I'll get the odd person who says they really enjoyed your workshop or something like what you received for being on that project. And she says, even though you kind of dismiss it a little bit, it's good on the days when you're feeling a little low, or you know you're dealing with more hassles and problems, and remember that you have persevered, you've done well. But if we stay on that project that was a highlight for you, because you weren't leading that project, right? You were one of the instrumental people on the team. Is that right?
Yeah, I was the main project manager on the technical side.
Oh, okay.
And there was a leader on the facility side and a leader on the quality side.
And I know we're going back a little bit, but I'm curious, because you do describe a high-performing team that actually stayed intact and, like you said, didn't have any insurmountable conflicts that would cause someone to depart or be removed or something. And just, like, do you have any sense when you look back on it, what was it that made it so effective? Because that's a rare sort of chemistry you came across there or helped create. I'm just curious.
Well, one thing is that we definitely basically liked working with each other and we respected each other's skills. So there could be certain tough days where one person was feeling down or pressured and another person would step in and kind of pick the ball up for them.
Yeah.
So there was a team strength that was incredible. So in other words, not one person was bearing the whole load and we helped pick each other up on those days when we had tough problems.
Yeah.
Another thing, maybe this is not directly related, but it's a good thing walking into that project that we didn't know everything, because had we understood all the technical hurdles we would have had to have overcome, we might have got discouraged, but really we just tackled each problem day by day. And I'll give you an example. One of our major vendors went bankrupt and we had to scramble to recover from that. And we did, and we notified Ford right away and they helped us, but they basically stayed arm lengths away. We gave Ford a plan and they let us make it happen.
Yeah.
And like going through a bankruptcy, you know, it's halfway through a launch is, and that was an equipment vendor in this case, but bottom line is it threw our plan upside down.
Yeah.
And we had to fix it. And thank God we had a team that could make it happen. So,
I think one of the lessons from that, just on the area of, because things will go sideways at different times, right? In various ways and various projects. And we always, or there can be, especially if you're not as seasoned, there's always this moment of panic, like, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it? And the customer is going to be unreasonable, or my boss is going to be unreasonable, or whatever. I think people need to realize that what most people know is that things do happen. What they want to know is that you're upfront about it and that you've got, that you have a plan. And remember, the plan doesn't have to be perfect. You can't even guarantee the plan will actually work, but they want to know that you've got a method of approach on how you intend to fix it. So that would be good coaching for anybody at any level in operations, supply chain, or manufacturing, is be the person who comes up with an idea of a plan or contributes to a plan that can get it back on track, even if you're not totally confident the plan will absolutely guaranteed to work.
Okay.
So if I ask the opposite side of this, well, actually, I'm curious, because I know you've had one set of experience with a company, and I'm thinking about your time at Honeywell, where I remember you telling me that they really, from a lean, continuous improvement, involvement, they really went beyond looking at it as tools, and they really created a culture of that. And, you know, we do a lot of work in manufacturing, and of course, they're always looking at whether it's a new shiny object in terms of a new idea, or it's just a traditional idea like continuous improvement or lean, and given your various certifications and experience in the area, what are some of the things you notice that maybe set Honeywell or companies like that apart from others where they just didn't have the same, I don't know, commitment or culture? Can you comment on that?
Well, I would say on the Honeywell success side, one thing that they did, and they're obviously an extremely large multinational company with significant resources, but they basically made it that there was going to be a lean journey. They called it the Honeywell Operating System, or HOS, and that every plant had a plan through their plant manager and their team to achieve the goals. And they set goals of bronze, silver, and gold. And there was a 3-year journey. What was amazing about it is that, first of all, you were encouraged and it was celebrated, but it was also expected. So in other words, yes, you are going to do it, and yes, you're going to be successful, and yes, we will help you. Oh, and by the way, going backwards is not an option. So although, you know, in other words, they made sure that we had the resources and there was corporate coaching and support, and they trained the heck out of us. So we had leadership training, we had lean training, we had the various tools training, the specific tools, and they stuck with us. But another thing they did that made it extremely effective is that they closed all the back doors. And what I mean by back doors was when they would introduce a new system, either in purchasing or maintenance, like TPM, or could be KPIs or anything, or quality metrics, you had to stop using the old system. Uh-huh. And basically they made it such in a way that the new system took over the old system, and you weren't running two at once. So in
That's
other
nice.
words,
And you
you
also
had to
lost your
change.
security. You lost your security blanket of the going back to the old way or trying to work both at the same time. So there was no going back. So you had to figure out a way to use the new system well.
Yeah, that's right. And so I call that the back door. They took the back doors away. Once we made a transition in any given area, that was the new way. And we did not do it the old way. And there was corporate standards such that every plant had to adopt it. And then they were using interplant metrics within our group to make sure we were talking the same language. So not only the systems, but all the metrics and the budgeting and everything that went with it was always, it was standardized.
So when you think of Honeywell, it's fun, and just again for the benefit of the audience, most people who are going to listen to this podcast probably know a little bit about lean and continuous improvement, and most would know that the probably the biggest proponent of those tools and methods was Toyota and the Toyota Production System, and really it was Toyota's commitment to embrace it fully and not waver from it, and you could argue that Toyota isn't obviously a perfect company, but it really sticks to it the strongest. And then it sounds like Honeywell really did as close as a job as it could to making the Honeywell operating system, keep the level of commitment as high as what Toyota had done. But you've also probably worked in other organizations where they cherry-pick some of the tools from Toyota Production System or tools from Lean and Continuous Improvement and didn't get the kind of traction that you saw at Honeywell. I'm just wondering, what did you observe about the difference there? What happened in the organizations where they fumbled around a bit more with implementing 5S or lean or continuous improvement?
I would say, though, on those organizations, we'll just call them less mature in terms of their systems. You can get drastic differences between departments. So I found that in those organizations, if there was a person that believed in that methodology, whether it be 5S or other, inside their department, they were very strong. But you might go to another department in the same company, and they didn't adopt the same sort of practices. So in other words, you don't have the standardization within the company. And that's where it prevents pressure on the plant manager to get everybody to play in the sandbox, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Yes.
So what you're saying is if some departments are more accelerated and advanced, either because they have somebody who's experienced in it, more committed to it, and others where it's less so, it's going to hold back the overall initiative, and then you're into more sort of nagging and reminding and problem solving and troubleshooting.
Yeah, and you do get some gains. You absolutely get some gains. What they call the lower level or the foundational elements of lean are always valuable, and they do help all companies. But you never get the maturity and that continuous improvement sort of mentality and mantra that Toyota has because they live it every day. So another thing that Honeywell did, again, this is a Honeywell example, they made sure that the integration of the system was interdepartmental. So in other words, I would have, like, I was in maintenance at the time. My metrics were aligned to production. So in other words, my incentives and goals and daily production discussion was about uptime in production, even though I was the maintenance manager. And engineering manager spoke about quality, and the finance manager spoke about logistics. And so there was this interdepartmental codependency. So we were kind of forced to play, like we had to support each other, or they wouldn't achieve their goals and I couldn't achieve mine. So they
So,
kind of get nice though.
well, let's pull that thread a little further because one of the things we have a new model, and I know I showed it to you a few months back called the Operational Priorities Accelerator, and it acknowledges that that departments often have misaligned targets that cause them almost to compete instead of collaborate. And you obviously saw the benefit of the positive way at Honeywell. What have you seen in the opposite of that caused maybe unnecessary tension or conflict where they weren't kind of all trying to make the whole better? Have you seen that where they aren't where the targets aren't as aligned?
I would say a classic example is my earlier days in automotive. For example, capital projects and tooling. Often there would be significant purchasing pressure to source tooling or materials or equipment, and purchasing had their goals of, for example, savings through negotiating or lowest bidder. Often we knew that some of our vendors, and they told us off the record, they were adding cost to their quotes to give it back to purchasing so purchasing could achieve their goals. But in reality, would have been better to have more of a long-term approach where we would source equipment or tooling based on past performance, warranty issues, and total life cycle cost as opposed to upfront cost. So there's a good example of project managers and, would want to pick the vendor based on lowest total cost over a longer scope, whereas purchasing would often focus on upfront cost, and then after that, operations would have to take over and deal with it.
Yeah,
And
it's funny
then
you
whether
say
it, yeah.
that because I remember one automotive company that we had done work with, and they did glass products for automotive, and the plant I was at was again making glass products that would go into cars and trucks, and they said, look, we came up with a way that if we made a little small design change in our plant, it would reduce or would smooth how to install this into the vehicle in the assembly plant, maybe saving, 6 minutes of assembly time, which is significant, right, on a vehicle in the assembly process. But they said the purchase price would have to go up by about 25 cents or so per glass unit. And they pitched it to purchasing, and the purchasing person says, no way, my incentive is based on purchase price. I don't really care about saving 6 minutes in the assembly plant, which is exactly the opposite from what you're suggesting. I mean, really, total cost. And so, by the way, if you're a listener of this and you're going, our company kind of has these divergent measurements and metrics that cause us to not be aligned, it's good for you to be aware of that as a leader, no matter where you are in the organization. And if you're in a position where you can influence it, really take John's advice to heart here and like focus on total cost, or even like the performance. So we see examples, at the time of recording this, Boeing's going through some struggles right now where it really took a lot of its, say, integrated manufacturing, and it kind of pushed it out to its supply chain, and the supplier was struggling, and then you get, missed quality checks and so forth. And it's still manageable, but you have to really then have sort of supplemented doing it yourself with your own inspections to now really robustly auditing your supplier to the so that they're doing those things. So I just think that there's opportunities as companies look to push things in the supply chain to remember that you have to manage those supplier relationships as if they're probably part of the mothership in some ways, because once you're partners, that's what I've heard about Toyota. Toyota can be a tough negotiator about, getting the terms right up front and deciding who they're going to work with. But once they're in, they're going to work with you collaboratively from that point on because you and they are in it together to satisfy their customers.
Yeah, and I would add to that, from the Toyota and the lean philosophy, the very mature companies have great, be fair to purchasing, great technical standards and support so that the vendors that quote have great documents to quote to, which are also become, statements of requirements, performance expectations. So that makes it easier for purchasing. And they also have standards, something related to, for example, early equipment management, where they actually develop processes, and sometimes they have to have strategic partners to make those processes work. Like you
Yeah.
said, they become part of the family.
John, one of the
Yeah.
principles we always go by is no one is deliberately trying to do the wrong thing. So a lot of, I mean, you can have, quote, evil actors in any organization, but they're rare. I mean, most people are just trying to do what they think is right or what they're told is right or the mandate and what the organization tells them to focus on. So we never want people to feel guilty about things. We just want people to see that there may be a better way. One of the questions I have for you, because you said again back to Honeywell, they really integrated both the toolkits, the techniques, and the training behind it, but they also seem to marry up this leadership side of things. And we're in the leadership training business, and you've been gracious enough in various capacities to bring us in to help develop the skills of the supervisors, team leads, and managers. I'm just wondering what your take is on. Because leadership is a little bit nebulous. I always tell people, like, there is no SOP on how not to be an SOB. So it's not like you can follow an absolute checklist for at least the softer side of leadership. But I'm curious what you think about leadership and how it, I don't know, integrates with the tools, I guess, to bring maximum impact. Do you have any thoughts on the strength of leadership and how it influences the business performance?
I will, again, I'll use Honeywell as the example, but and others have been good too. I think the big thing is, as a leader, whether it be a formal leader, meaning you have the position and then the title, or you're an informal leader, if you work with people and they see the benefit of you helping them in their particular role, like it might be the rollout of a new procedure or best practices from one department to another, if they see you working with them and understand, I always say they need to know what's in it for them. And as a leader, if you can sell that and see that you're actually there to help. So that's portrayal of in a supporting role. It's amazing what you can get done directly and indirectly with the team by just letting them know, hey, you're actually here to help and you're not here to create conflict and problems for them.
Yeah,
So.
and I think where that shows up the most is with a leader who may be very preoccupied on looking good, let's say, for because some corporations have a very much like you stay in a role maybe only for 1.5 years or 2 years, and then you have to have accomplished something notable so that you're kind of ready for your next promotion. And I've seen that some people who are influenced by that, which is just a simple incentive scheme, right? Do a good job, make an impact, and we'll probably look at promoting you. But what they don't realize is that as you're trying to make an impact, which is still a worthy, noble thing, that instead of trying to force it on people who may be resistant, you've got to, you said, what's in it for me? It's like you've got to show them that adopting that new approach or that new method will actually reduce a frustration or a hassle or something that's causing them grief. And then they're like, hey, I'm all for that. I didn't know whether you've probably seen your share of folks who seem to be posturing for promotion, versus people who are better at maybe smoothing things over as they're trying to make their mark and get promoted.
Yeah, so I would say in that case, there are certain people that are they're naturally career focused. Like I was too, but like I definitely had a technical bias. So sometimes people take that path of what's the quickest way to be in a higher position of influence. I always felt that way too, but I did it through a technical stream. But it's amazing too, as you improve or get to different departments, as you change over time, those same people that you helped earlier help you again. So it's kind of nice. So you're building your team as you go.
One thing, folks, I think you can get it just from John's vibe, is I found that John really doesn't particularly care if an assignment is as the maintenance manager, as an engineering manager. He just wants to bring his technical experience and good way with people to make a positive impact or difference. And you raise a good point, John, which is that most organizations need to embrace the idea that there's a technical specialty path and people are going to gravitate to that sometimes more, and others are going to want to just get to higher positions of authority and span of control over others, which again is fine. We actually need both. But both are worthy and noble, as opposed to, you're only successful if you decide to become a plant manager and a VP and a COO. Nothing wrong with those things, but what about the person who becomes a center of expertise in the area of engineering, quality, and lean, for example? John, I think one of the things that everyone wants to know about is you told us about that great project at Ford. You had that great experience at Honeywell. Can you tell us about something, a project or initiative that, at least at the moment, was either painful, difficult, and even how you may have gained something from that? Like, even if at the time it seemed like a disaster, any thoughts you can share on that?
Yeah, well, I had one particular career choice I made a few years ago, and I'll not name the company. Incredibly technologically advanced major Canadian company. What surprised me, it didn't work out for me in terms of my fit in the organization, because I didn't understand the importance of culture. And that particular company, I knew culture was important, but I didn't think, oh, there's human values. There's business values and business results. And until I was physically in that culture, I didn't realize how critical that mentality was of results first, other things second. And that was one difficult career path that I took. I was a couple of years in that particular role, and I needed to change because I just wasn't fitting in because I had some, basically personal differences about how to do something. I agreed with the end goals, but just the methods of how to get there.
Let me ask you
And
again,
that was
when,
autocratic, right?
I always, one of the things that strikes me when I hear that people make changes in their career, I'll often ask if there is a moment that they can think of where, because most of us, I think when we take on a new job challenge or we get into a new role, we're like very optimistic and hope that it works out amazingly. And then there's often either one event, one conversation, one meeting where, because it sounds like, you know, you went in with good expectations that everything should be fine. You know, why should it be any different? And I'm just wondering, without, like, again, we're not naming names here, but what I'm curious of is, can you think of the moment when you finally decided, or at least initially decided, that this did not feel like a good fit?
Yeah, I would say the moment was when, if you're working, and, you know, I won't, just let's say I was working 6 or 7 days a week on call 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what I did to the very best of my human ability, that I was always had to do a lot of explaining on Mondays, yeah, meaning that this didn't happen last week, that didn't.
Right.
And then basically there was the path where I just couldn't meet the expectations.
Yeah. You couldn't make them happy no matter what you tried.
Yeah. No matter what I tried. Yeah. And that's, I realized that, you know, I made a mental plan of, okay, what is my next career move? Again, the positive of that is I learned a tremendous amount,
right,
and I applied that in my, you know, jobs afterwards. But those were tough lessons I had to learn there.
Yeah, I think what's good is that it made you, because you had the good experiences before this, that one, and then you had that difficult experience, and it only reinforced what you got from the good ones and understood how to create that in your next adventure and even how to advise. I mean, one of the things that people should know about John is, no matter where, what role he's in, you know, in terms of the organization, he's always been a positive influencer, willing to speak up when he thinks it's helpful. So I appreciate that. John, what would your advice be to someone maybe more junior, and they could be an engineer, a technical person? Yeah, why don't we take that angle, since that's where your sweet spot is. But, you know, they aspire to, you know, obviously make beyond whatever their education or their area of focus was, but they want to kind of make the most of it. What kind of advice would you offer to someone younger in their career, sort of still wants to seek future promotions and growth? Is there something that you'd coach a young person on as something to be aware of or to focus on?
Well, I would say in your role, like, really, number one, people are everything. So success through your team, like, you, in other words, you help them, they help you. And that, not talk about you being their boss, just part of the team.
Yeah.
Also treat everything you do as, if you can, try to see it as a process and observe. Like, in other words, watch how things happen, how people behave, how processes flow, how material flows and information flows. And if you can get really good at visualizing a process and seeing it, you can then get very good at seeing abnormalities. In other words, when something's wrong, like, hey, wait a minute, there used to be 3 rows of stock here, there's only one today. Or, you know what, we have a pattern of scrap on Mondays. Or we, you know, I could give you 100 examples.
Yeah.
A person that learns to see the process, and it's an immensely powerful tool. So that's one piece of advice. Another piece is, when you see that process and you see a problem, always, I call it, manage up if you can. In other words, try to be helpful and come with an idea or a solution or something to your superior, of whoever that person would be. So in other words, you're seen as part of, number one, being observant, number two, being part of the solution. And then it's amazing how other opportunities come your way. Say, hey, do you want to volunteer to be on this team? That's my third piece of advice for a young person. Volunteer to do things that are a little bit outside of your area. Like, for example, in my younger days, I got to go to Montreal, and I spent a week in a foundry in Quebec. Fantastic experience. They just needed someone to help training on a certain piece of equipment that I happen to know something about. It had nothing to do with my job directly, but they asked me and I said yes. And years later, those connections came to help me.
I want to highlight something, John, that you shared, which can get lost sometimes. Because when I've been asked to come in and do some coaching, especially if the leader is a little bit more abrasive or distant or just having friction between them and their team, inevitably one of the sources of that is that the leader is spending too much time away from the team and the process. They're trying to manage it on their computer and at their desk. And it's a great thing that you said, which is so basic, and it's a fundamental aspect of continuous improvement anyway, is to go and see, go and observe, watch what's going on, develop an understanding of it. I also loved your tip about when you do bring this up to your manager, who is ultimately driven by wanting to, make the process more successful, make the business more successful, make more money, is describe what you've observed, what you recommend or something that might help, offer to be part of that and contribute as much as you can. And I think that's just great for people who are just trying to make an impact, especially if they're in a role that doesn't have all the authority, but they're still able to observe, and those observations are valuable. I'm wondering, John, if there's anything else that you think that you'd, I know I let you know kind of what our theme was going to be for the day. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience?
Let me see. Oh yeah, it's one of your ideas was, what aha moments have you had in your life or your career? And one of them, and definitely it's so true, is don't assume something can't be made better. Like a lot of times people will say, oh no, this will never work. And often they're right, but if you just go and say, okay, you observe, you try to work with them and understand the why, it's amazing the little nuances you can learn. You might not be able to solve the whole problem, but you can make it better. So my, one aha moment is that problems are solved not in big chunks, but usually little pieces. You can move little pieces in the right direction. It's amazing. And then eventually, sometimes you'll gain enough momentum that the problem will solve itself or it makes it manageable. And then you can change the process to deal with that. So that's one thing, always ask why. Another one is that most problems don't require money, meaning you got to think first. And so money doesn't solve problems, thinking does, and people's will or motivation. So that's a big one. And then the last one is obviously the team. Like if you work, if you isolate yourself too much, you can get great things done individually, but you will eventually hit a wall. So the teamwork part, I cannot underestimate or
Hey, I
under.
just, first of all, John, you're so good. I hope anyone listening, or if you're watching this in video format, that you see the curiosity. You can even see it sparkle in John's eyes, I think. It's like, so what he's saying is it's helpful to know when a process isn't working. But if you get hung up on the criticism of it, instead of just thinking, well, what would make it better? And just looking for that opportunity. And like you said, it doesn't have to be a big, expensive solution. It could be just a really small idea or thing. So, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. If somebody wants to find, well, first, if somebody wants to find out more about Attica Manufacturing and the custom machining that you do, how do they discover that?
Yeah, I guess it would start with our website. It,
Okay.
in fact,
Which
I don't have it
I
memorized. Dang
That's
it, I should
okay.
have it.
I
Yes. www.attica-mfg.com.
Yeah, attica-mfg.com. I should have had it in front of me, John, so that's on me too. And then if they want to look up you, is that something they could find you on LinkedIn?
Yes, I am on
All
LinkedIn.
right, so
Yes.
you can look up John Burke Martel. John has been a great contact of mine, and I think you'd agree, John, that our relationship, although it's been, sometimes I've just been the vendor, but we've just had great conversations. So when you get those kind of relationships in your career, it's just good to nurture them from time to time. So I'm always interested in what John's up to, and he's had a really fascinating journey. So John, thank you for being on the podcast, and I hope for those listening and watching, you got some gems that can help you on your career journey. And for now, we'll sign off from the Accelerating Operational Priorities podcast.
Thank you.